then it could get ugly pretty quickly. And it's because of when everything rises, the system kind of makes everything rise because of the impact of passes management. But the same thing goes the other way. If somebody starts to sell, and if the big companies start to sell, then everybody else has to start selling by definition. You can get a very quick move to the downside.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita. This is Brent Johnson. Every week we come to you to talk about financial markets, the madness that surrounds those markets, and a little bit about Brent's dollar milkshake theory. If you're not sure what that is, check out the Start Here playlist at the top of the YouTube channel. It'll take you through all of that and give you a quick introduction into the dollar's role in the global financial system and Brent's dollar milkshake theory. So Brent, let's jump into financial markets. But before we do that, we do have something to share that is somewhat financial markets related. Do you want to talk about the new feather in our cap or the new arrow in our quiver?
Sure. Yeah. We kind of launched a new, I don't know what an account or service or whatever you want to call it, but it's just kind of an extension of what we're already doing. We're calling it the Macro Alchemist, and we're going to be posting, you know, it's kind of a combination of charts analysis, but it's, you know, we try to have a lot of fun on this channel and it's a little bit more lighthearted. Macro Alchemist is going to try to be a little bit more on the serious side, but we're, you know, considering that we're involved in it and another friend of ours is involved in it as well. He can be named at a later date. You know, it's going to be a little bit more of a serious take, but you know, when you get us three jokers involved, you know, there's obviously going to be a little bit of lightheartedness in it as well. So if you get a chance, check it out on Twitter. We've started posting a few charts. We'll likely post some deeper analysis here and there, perhaps some reports. But yeah, we'd love for you to, you know, follow that as well. Send it around, share it far and wide, and join us on that journey as well.
Yeah. So you could check out Macro_Alchemist at Twitter. As Brent was kind of interluding to, there'll be more stuff coming out around that. But for now, just kind of participate in the conversation on Twitter. There'll be more of, I feel like, as Brent was describing, this particular channel, the Milkshakes Markets Madness, always originated as something that was going to be more focused on the madness and be a bit more of a silly take on things. We've definitely kind of framed it more around markets. But there's also, I think, a more broad audience that is watching the show. So sometimes when we have these conversations, maybe we are overly granular about some things, or the way we describe things is so that we can kind of bring everybody into the fold and everyone can get something from the conversation depending what their level is. The Macro Alchemist will kind of trim a lot of that fat. So if you're someone who's enjoying these conversations but really wants to kind of get to the core of the topics, maybe even participate themselves and have more of, I guess you could say, an institutional conversation. Stay tuned, because I think Macro Alchemist is going to be where we take things in that type of direction.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We've kind of been batting it around for, I don't know, 2, 3, 6 months, a little off and on. But I'm really excited about it. It's going to be fun. This is obviously always going to be our baby, I think, because this is the one we started with. But, you know, as we branch out and offer a few different things, sometimes we're going to maybe perhaps do it in a different channel or a different line of thinking. But everything's always related. And, you know, it's been fun. So we're looking forward to doing this one as well.
Yeah, they'll play off of each other. So check it out. Thanks for everybody who's been part of this channel, and keep an eye out for more about the Macro Alchemist. So jumping into macro and markets, it would seem the wrong thing to do if we did not start out by talking about NVIDIA.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing. I mean, listen, I'm a huge fan of NVIDIA. I think it is an amazing company. I personally think the valuation's crazy. You know, but it doesn't mean that it can't get crazier. And I think that's what we saw this week. You know, it's funny because markets were kind of at their highs last week and kind of bounced off the highs and kind of bumped their head a little bit, pulled back a little bit. And then this week with Fed minutes coming out on Wednesday during the day, you know, and those were a little bit more hawkish than expected and things kind of sold off. And what was interesting was that, and I didn't send it out, but I was almost going to send it out saying, you know, the only thing that can save us now is NVIDIA, because they were reporting after the bell or after the close on Wednesday. And, you know, they blew out earnings and they guided higher. And so you know, again, and so they did kind of save it. And so the, here's the thing is that we came in on Thursday morning and the markets were up, Nvidia was up, but here, you know, a lot of times Nvidia has, you know, they'll announce earnings and then they'll be up $100, $150 the next day, you know, 10, 20%. And so on Thursday morning, they were up 7 or 8%. After the earnings on Wednesday night in the aftermarkets, they were up like 3 or 4%, I think. And I was kind of thinking, well, gosh, they're usually up like 10-15%. So I was surprised that they were only up a couple percent. And it actually gave me a little bit of caution. I was like, well, maybe this is it, right? And so then the next morning, it was up even more, it was up 10%, but it wasn't that far into the morning and everything else started to sell off. And by the end of the day, I think Nvidia was up maybe 5, 6, 7% by the end of the day. So still, again, I mean, it's nothing to sneer at, right? I mean, it's one of the biggest companies in the world and it's up 7% in a day. And, you know, it's amazing. But by the end of the day, you know, all markets except for Nvidia were basically red on the day. Now today, everything bounced a little bit again. And here's the thing is, I follow a number of different sentiment charts on different industries, different individual stocks, different currencies and commodities. And last week and into the beginning of this week, we had a number of different markets hitting their extremes on sentiment and hitting, there's a service called DMARC, which is basically it's a mathematical pattern recognition system, I think is probably the simplest way to say it. And it's not perfect, but it's typically pretty good. And a number, they have different sell counts. So, you know, sometimes it's a 9 count, sometimes it's a 13 count. 13 counts are a pretty big indicator. And so a number of different things were hitting both 13 counts on daily and weekly. And so I'm not sure if, I think we got a number of signals on the daily. And then this week, a number of 13s triggered on, we hit the count on the weekly, but it has not triggered yet. So it was the point was though, is that if we would have closed down today, so we actually closed up today, not a lot, but up a little bit today. If we would have closed down today and these 13s would have been triggered and these, you know, sell off from the highs of sentiment and going into a 3-day weekend and the environment we're in, you know, it could have been very interesting next week. And it still could be. My point is that we're kind of at these extremes on positioning and sentiment in a number of different things. Now, as I would say, that doesn't mean that we can't go higher. It doesn't mean that they can't get more extreme. But my point is that we're at kind of a key level on a number of different positions, number of different industries. And really nothing is more important than NVIDIA itself. Because it's become a point where it's such a big company and everybody's involved in it and everybody's chasing it. And with the rise of passive, the more you get market cap weighted indices and indexes, the bigger a company gets, the more it goes up, the more these indices have to buy it. And so it's a thing where they just become bigger and bigger. And that's great as long as they're going higher. The problem is if you get a number of these different sentiment indicators where they're kind of at their extremes and they start to roll over, and then for whatever reason, NVIDIA were to roll over, then it could get ugly pretty quickly. And it's because of when everything rises, the system kind of makes everything rise because of the impact of passive management. But the same thing goes the other way. If somebody starts to sell and if the big companies start to sell, then everybody else has to start selling by definition, you can get a very quick move to the downside. And so I feel like that we're just in a really interesting place right now. And you know, it's funny. I whenever I say interesting now, John, I think of you because you always say that that's like my favorite word. But I do think that we're at kind of this, like this interesting place in the market. And listen, I don't know whether the market's going higher or lower next week. What I know is that we're at extreme levels of sentiment in a number of different things. Some of them have started to roll over. Positioning has gotten pretty stretched and you've got the VIX at basically its all-time low. And so, you know, I wouldn't outright short the market here, but if you have any concerns at all, it's not a bad time to be picking up a few insurance policies.
All right. So a couple of things on that. I think the beginning of the interest rate hikes in 2022, it kicked off this wave of uncertainty. You know, what was the future going to be like? You know, Fed historically raises interest rates, or just monetary policy in general tends to create huge bubbles and then big busts. But, you know, we're 2 years into it. We can now look back in the rearview mirror and see all that fear mongering was wrong. It feels more stable than anything right now. And I guess it's kind of a somewhat of a pushback to the idea that I understand the PE ratios and all these other things like DMARC and sentiment. It's definitely been going on for a long time, but you know, I almost wonder, it'd be really cool. I know this weekend you posted a tweet that said what documentary you should watch, and you're kind of being tongue in cheek. And one of them you said was Matrix, and you had all these kind of like dystopian movies. It made me think of Back to the Future 2 and Biff Gets the Book, you know, a movie we talked about before. I wonder what it was like going back to Industrial Revolution, like being in that moment when the whole world was about to change. And I know there's this real friction with AI. I've seen people who've been in this industry for a really long time throwing out some, in my opinion, some really bad takes. It's like this no big deal. This isn't crypto. I think artificial intelligence is fascinating. And the deeper I go into it, the more I'm blown away by it. And so maybe I don't want to say this time is different because you and I both know it isn't, but maybe this definitely has a lot more steam left in it than people think.
Well, so where I come down on this, John, is number one, I agree with you. I kind of feel like we're in an environment where valuations really don't matter. You know, because even though I think kind of call it short term, we're probably due for some kind of either a pause or a pullback. Like, I think equities are going much higher for some of the reasons that we're talking about now. Number one, I think we're in an environment where valuations just aren't going to matter. Eventually they will, but you know, they might not matter for a while. I think one of the few growth areas in the world is going to be technology, right? And I think we're in an environment where, as I've discussed many times, where the higher rates in the US pull capital into the US. Once they get into the US, they go into, I don't know, they go into assets, right? They either go into T-bills, or they go into stocks, or they go into technology, or they go into real estate. And it has an upward pressure effect on US and US dollar assets. And I think those go a lot higher. That doesn't mean that they will go that way in a straight line. And it doesn't mean that you can't have a 3 month plateau, or maybe we could pull back for 10% and then restart the move higher. The thing I would say about Nvidia is that it could be the best company in history, and it could lead this AI, you know, revolution. And it could go from, what's it at now? $1,000. It could go to $5,000. That doesn't mean it won't go to $700 first, right? I think it was maybe a month or so ago, I said we could either go to $500 or $1,000, and neither one of them would surprise me. Well, here we are at $1,000, right? And the other thing I'd say is, you know, think the revolution that we can all remember. You know, I wasn't around for the Industrial Revolution. I'm getting old, but I'm not quite that old. But I was around for the dot-com boom, right? And people on both sides of this issue were right. The internet was absolutely revolutionary. Some of the companies are the biggest companies in the world now, but 90% of the companies got blown up and went to zero. And things like, you know, Amazon and Microsoft and Google, they went up a lot. They corrected by 60, 70, 80%. And now they're multiples higher than they were at that time. So it kind of becomes one of these things where everybody's going to be right. It's just a matter of what time frame they're right on, right? But I do think that 4 or 5 years from now, or at some point in 4 or 5 years from now, equities, specifically technology equities, will be much higher than they are now. I think it's likely they will pull back sometime. I think we will experience these hard drawdowns, but I expect U.S. equities and specifically technology equities to be much higher in the years ahead.
Well, one of the things that might be working as a strong tailwind for a company like Nvidia versus something like the .com. I mean, you had websites that had nothing going on, you know, pets.com being valued at these ridiculous, you know, valuations when there was nothing happening. There was no revenue. There was no means for revenue. It was just a website. Versus now, I mean, you have the I guess you can say the NVIDIA competitor, Intel, down significantly. You have companies like PayPal down significantly. So I don't know if the dot-com era felt more like a mania, where I don't see a lot of AI companies sucking in stupid money. It just feels like there's two companies or a few companies sucking in all the money, which maybe it's like a tech milkshake in itself.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, you know, I've always said that the rise of passive, and you know, for people who aren't familiar with this rise of passive thesis, you know, our friend Mike Green has done an immense amount of work on this. So if you're not familiar with this and you want to dig into it more, just go to Google, go to YouTube, type in rise of passive, and type in Mike Green, and you'll find videos and presentations. And you know, I've always given credit to his work for part of why I think U.S. equities and U.S. assets will go so much higher, as part of my thesis, because I think that does play a role. You know, the rise of passive, when capital comes into the U.S., it's going to go into something. And when it goes into these indices, they, by definition, they get pushed higher and pull everything with it. And so, you know, I think NVIDIA is a perfect example of this. But I think we will see at some point, and again, whether it happens this week, this month, or next year, I don't know the timing of it, but at some point we will see a dramatic sell-off in equities, and it will happen very fast and very quickly. And whether it goes down 10% or 30%, I don't know. But when it goes down, that will be the effect of passive management as well, because passive management has become such a big contributor to the overall market returns. I don't know if I have this exact, I'm going to say it, I might have it wrong, but I think the returns of NVIDIA have contributed something like 25% of the total return of the S&P 500 over the last year or something like that, or a year and a half. So one company, because if you look at all companies, they're not all rising at the same rate as the indexes, right? A lot of stocks have hit their 52-week highs and pulled back. The Russell, you know, as isn't up as much as, you know, the NASDAQ is, and the Russell's, you know, a broader based, snapshot of the economy. But that one company, NVIDIA, is driving a huge amount of the return of the overall indices. And that's great. Again, that's great when things are going up, but it's not great when it goes down.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw a chart. I don't know what the exact time series was. Well, let's say 50 years. The points that you're making, I mean, in the case of, do you go out there and try to be a stock picker, or do you just buy the indices like the S&P, the NASDAQ, et cetera? I think the chart showed over that 50-year time frame that the S&P returned an annualized like 11% or something like that. Now, there's probably other variables and things that they were including in that. Compounding comes into play. And so how much of that is, you know, including some of these drawdowns and where people end up getting out at the wrong time or getting in at the wrong time. But, it, you know, and even in environments like this, where you're starting to have outsized performance by, you know, a few companies, that's one of the advantages of the indexes. And that's ultimately what passive is. And you kind of highlighted the fact that this is something that Mike Green gets a lot of credit for the work he's done on. You and I were both in the room when he first did a presentation in 2019, and not many people had heard about it. And it was a lot of, you know, a lot of our jaws were on the floor when he did that presentation, but yeah. let's at least take a minute to be a little bit more clear about that. So passive means what? What is this? These passive vehicles, like the Fidelities, and then we'll talk about active as well.
So passive is basically indexing. And what indexing means is you don't try to pick the winners and the losers. You just go out and you buy all of them. And over time, the stock market itself, or the bond market, or the commodity, whatever it is, the index of all of the participants will rise over time. And so rather than trying to pick the winners and the losers, just be involved in the market itself, and over time it will rise. And that, and so the that's one philosophy. The other philosophy is no, you should not index. You should not go out and buy a broad, diversified basket of the indices. You should really try to find the 5, 10, 15, 20 companies that are going to outperform and you buy those based on the fundamentals, and you interview the management and you see what their sales growth is and their expense, you know, is, are their expenses rising or falling? And, you know, you actively pick and choose, and, you know, you buy one and you sell another one, and you're actively managing the portfolio. So indexing or passive is you're not actively managing. You're just buying the market and you're sitting back and you're observing. Active management is where you're really in there and involved in making decisions. And the active management used to be far and away the dominant method. And over the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years, Vanguard kind of pioneered the indexing. But then it got more popular and, you know, more companies kind of, BlackRock started doing, you know, some passive indices. Anyway, over the last 15 or 20 years, it's funny, I haven't looked at this in a couple of years, but the last time I looked at it, passive had become like 40% of the overall market to 60%, which is a huge amount. And just having a 40% share of the market, passive was already dominating the effects of passive were dominating the returns. And I think my guess is that now it's closer to 50%. It might even be over 50. That's something I need to look up to see where it's at. But but that is the trend, and that is where it's headed. And active managers are becoming, and passive management tends to have lower fees. Active management used to say we would justify our fees because our returns are higher and we're providing you more risk analysis or whatever it is. But as time has gone on and the passive indices have either outperformed or performed as well as the active management, more active managers have either had their fees, you know, compressed, or they've just given up trying to be active managers and have moved into passive managers.
Yeah. The other thing I'll add to that too, is you had mentioned Vanguard, but it's these huge retirement funds that a lot of people just, it's like an automatic deduction. It goes into the 401k or whatever managed account is intended or set up to do. And so these passive vehicles are very algorithmic as well. And so the capital comes in and they just buy, and they're basically buying that momentum. And because of that, it pushes everything up, which then causes the algorithms and these passive vehicles to buy even more. You kind of have this intense inertia that's driving a lot of these flows. So when you do have something like an NVIDIA happen, it very much is this like equity milkshake on autopilot.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm just going to touch on this because I think it's a good example. You know, a couple years ago, when interest rates were zero in the US and they were negative around the world, you would often hear people say, who would buy a bond that it's at its all-time high and interest rates are negative or zero? And the reality is the people who were asking the question were the people buying them, because in their 401ks, a lot of times in the 401ks, you're not even picking individual funds. You're saying, okay, I am 45 years old and my asset allocation should be X. And as a result, it should be, you know, 35% bonds, 10% gold, and 55% equities or whatever it is, right? But the choices in that bond portfolio are indices, and they're oftentimes they're capitalization weighted indices. And so the people that were buying those bonds that were going up in price were the passively managed bond funds that you find in 401ks. And the reason they were buying those bonds with either a zero or a negative yield is because they were the highest priced. And as they rose in price, the index had to buy them. And as they had to buy them, then more people went into that because it was performing. And it becomes this vicious cycle to the upside. And I think that's partly what we're seeing in U.S. equities. You know, it's a combination of passive management and asset flows into the United States. And I said, that is part of why I think equities in the U.S. will go much higher in the years ahead. But it's also because of passive that I think we will experience terrifying drawdowns along the way, because when sales do start, others have to sell, not because they want to, but because the machines are telling them that they have to. And the way the management takes place, the passive management, the rules are that you sell and something goes down in price. So it's a double-edged sword for sure.
Right. So everything we just described that works on the upside, can ultimately work in a vicious way on the downside. You can have these huge gap downs of 60% or 40% or whatever it is of the market is now suddenly selling at once, and there isn't a bid to catch that falling knife. Speaking of, and bids and catching falling knives, the Japanese yen and the Bank of Japan and the Japanese government bonds have been an interesting thing to watch. It was a couple of weeks ago where the yen blew out to 160. That has kind of calmed down, but now we're starting to see a slight uptick in bond yields. You know, with the points that we're making here in this conversation and some of the things that you're highlighting as concerns, specifically in the equity markets and with NVIDIA and a few outperformers, does something like the Japanese carry trade where you could go and borrow at zero and then go invest someplace else and get a yield, is that something when you're starting to see these bond yields increase, is that a concern for US equities?
Yes, absolutely. And it's for not just for US equities, it's kind of for everything, because the whole world is going in this direction. It's not just the US, it's not just US mutual funds or index funds. It's kind of a worldwide phenomenon. But, you know, to your point, I don't know what will cause a downturn in equities. It could just be a lack of new buyers. So we don't necessarily have to have this big negative shock. But the point is I think the point you're making is, there is a lot of money that's been invested around the world as part of the Japanese yen carry trade. And what a carry trade is when you borrow in a currency that has very low rates and you go invest it elsewhere. So as an example, rates have been at zero in Japan for 20 years or whatever the number is, 15 years. And so you borrow at zero, you take that money and you go buy, I don't know, Brazilian equities, or you invest in, you know, commodities or whatever it is. And if those go up 4 or 5% and you put leverage on it, now you're up, I don't know, 10-12%, but your borrowing costs are zero. So it's a great way to lever up your returns. That's fine as long as the carry trade stays in effect. And as long as rates are at zero, it's hard to get financing at less than zero. So there hasn't been a big need to like pay off these Japanese loans. But as interest rates in Japan finally start to rise, it's not as cheap as it used to be. And now it's, instead of being at zero, now it's back at 1%. And then, you know, 1% is still pretty low, right? But what if it goes to 1.5 or 2, right? Now all that capital that's been deployed elsewhere comes rushing back, and because it's pulling out of those and it has to go pay off those yen borrowing, right? And so that the cover of the unwind of the Japanese carry trade, so when the liquidity leaves those other places that's been invested, now flows back to Japan, that's depriving those areas of liquidity. That could potentially then lead to some selling, and then once the selling start, the active man or the passive management, you know, kicks into gear and everybody else starts selling. So that could certainly happen. Now, the funny thing about the yen, and we've talked about this before, but to me, the yen right where it's at right now is okay. But if it gets significantly weaker, we've got all kinds of problems. And if it gets significantly stronger, we got all kinds of problems. Because if it gets a lot stronger, that's going to be the unwinding of the yen carry trade. But if it gets a lot weaker, then that puts an incredible amount of pressure on China, who then ends up having to devalue their currency. And that sends a deflationary wave to the rest of the world. So in many ways, I think the yen may be the most important, or one of the most single most important factors in the world today. And I think it bears a lot of attention. The yen sold off really hard. I think it went to 160, let's call it a month ago. And then the Bank of Japan came in and intervened, and they took it from 160 back to like 155. So as the number rises, that's the yen weakening. And as the number falls, that's the yen strengthening. So they took it back to like 154, 155, you know, through market purchases. But what's interesting now is the yen has fallen back to where it was. It's almost back to, I think it's a 158 or 159 now. It's getting back to that 160 level. This is despite 10-year interest rates in Japan going back to 1%. So as the interest rates have risen, that again, that typically acts as kind of a magnet for capital to come into that currency, and it typically will lead to a currency strengthening. We're not seeing that yet, despite the fact that the JGB yield has risen back to 1%.
which is perfectly intertwined with what we should look at next year, because around the time that all this stuff was happening in Japan, I mean, it's been a narrative for how long? I mean, 2018, 19 is when you came up with the dollar milkshake theory, but there's always this conversation that the US dollar is going to die. And if we're at least kind to everyone else, the broader argument is that fiat money and bank credit is going to die. And so when you had this kind of poster child of that example, Japan and the Japanese yen blowing out, that's around the time we started to see these big moves in commodities and precious metals. And everyone was excited, like, this is it. This is worth, silver's going to 50. It broke through 30, and it's now kind of using 30 as support. Gold was going to be off to the races, but now seems to be stumbling around this 2300, 2400 mark. And all the other commodities like copper and oils, although they had huge runs, are now kind of pulling back. What is your take on some of the movement in those markets, and how is it correlated to the things that we've been talking about?
Well, so, you know, you mentioned I started talking about the milkshake theory back in 2018, 19. And essentially what the theory is, it's a framework for how I see a sovereign debt and currency crisis playing out. But part of a sovereign debt and currency crisis is kind of this whole death of fiat, or, you know, how are they going to inflate away all the problems the governments, the monetary authorities, and how are they, one of the ways they're going to deal with, they're going to devalue their currency. And the milkshake is kind of the process via which I think this happens. I think the dollar is the last to fall. But so I've been involved, I've been a precious metals investor for a long time, many years before I started talking about this theory of mine. And gold is still a very key component of an overall portfolio. I say that because I've been familiar with this whole death of fiat. Fiat currency always loses value. Be invested in hard assets. I've been involved in this for a very long time. I actually just posted a chart before we jumped on here. Commodities as a whole are the same level as they were when I graduated high school. And that's a long time ago. My point is that when people tell me we're in the death of fiat, fiat currency has to get debased, it's going to go lower, so just buy hard assets and you'll be fine, I'm very sympathetic to that view. And I agree that everybody should own hard assets. Where I disagree is I don't think that this is a foolproof strategy that you are guaranteed to make money and you can't get hurt along the way. Especially if you are in retirement or moving towards retirement. Now, if you're 26 years old or 28 years old or 33 years old and you got 20 years ahead of you and you don't have to worry about a drawdown because you're not pulling on a pension or your IRA, or, you know, you don't have to use your investment portfolio to support your living, perhaps that's different. But I work with a lot of people who are either in retirement or moving towards retirement. And, you know, they don't want to suffer a 20, 30, 40% drawdown. And that's part of why they hire me. And so bringing this back to commodities, you know, to your point, as the yen was falling and the dollar was languishing around, you know, 104, 103, and people were saying, and gold was starting to move higher and copper was breaking out and oil was starting to move higher again and nat gas was starting to rise. And people saying, this is it. See, this is the death of fiat. And I said a couple times, listen, I believe that everybody should own commodities, and I believe they will go higher in the years ahead, but it's not going to be a straight line. There will be pullbacks. And sentiment was getting very extreme and positioning was very extreme. And a week ago today, I bought a bunch of puts on silver. I bought more on Monday. But I bought a bunch of puts last Friday, and I put out this long Twitter thread of why I did it. And of course, everybody told me I was an idiot and didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, how could you buy puts on silver when fiat currency is clearly breaking down? And again, you'll have to read the thread for all my arguments. But the point is, markets don't move in a straight line. And even though fiat currency does lose value over time, it doesn't always mean it's going to be easy. And so the reason I bring this up is because last Friday, a number of different commodities were very high, very extended, extremely high on the sentiment scales, extremely high on the relative strength measurements. That's what led me to buy the puts on silver. But it was the same for copper. It was the same for gold. It was the same for silver. Even oil was making a move back to around 80, 81. Over the weekend, the Iranian president's helicopter went down. You know, there was some speculation that perhaps this was foul play, and opened up on Monday and gold was at its all-time high and silver was now at, I don't know, 32, or did it get to 33? I can't remember. I think I got close to 33. Copper went to like 520. Oil was back kind of around $80. And so, you know, again, this was like death of fiat. You know, this is why you have to own real assets. Well, turns out that at least so far, no foul play in the Iranian president's helicopter. Then the Fed minutes come out. They're a little bit more hawkish than expected. And what happens? Gold pulls back $120. That's a big move. You know, that's almost almost a 5 or 6% move. Silver went down 6 or 7%. Copper went from 520 to 475. That's a big move. Oil, you know, was at 80. I think it pulled back to like 76, 77. So the point is the reason I bring this up is I don't want anybody to think that I think that you should not own hard assets. You should definitely have some allocation to your portfolio in hard assets, but it isn't a foolproof, safe plan that cannot get hurt along the way. And so when things get extended, when sentiment gets over its skis, when positioning gets out of whack, it's not a bad idea to take a few chips off the table once in a while. Even if you're sure of the long-term outcome, it's not a bad idea to do some tactical trades along the way that can kind of help protect you.
Now, what you used to do is you used to just bet Peter Schiff a gold coin. Now you just piss everyone off by putting buying puts against precious metals.
I'll take this opportunity to address this here. People will sometimes say, well, Brent, why would you do... It's fine that you bought the puts. Why do you have to put it on Twitter? And okay, a couple of reasons. Number one, it's fun. Okay, so you know, you guys know me by now. I like to mix it up a little bit on Twitter. It's never personal. It's just, you know, it's a debate. It's like, it's an intellectual challenge. But the second thing, and you can choose to believe this or not, but part of the reason that I spend so much time on Twitter, and part of the reason that we do this show, is I actually do want to help the people that are interested in what I have to say, that I don't manage their money directly. And I've been doing this for 25 years now, and I certainly don't have everything figured out, but I have learned a few things along the way. And the point I was making with buying the puts last week was I was not sure it would work out, and perhaps it still won't work out. Right now, it looks like it was a good decision, but you know, we'll see. But the point is if you ever are going to buy puts on silver, or if you ever are going to do tactical short-term trades against a long-term thesis that you think is going up, that is the time to do it. You do it when everybody else thinks it's wrong. You do it when sentiment is at its absolute high. You do it when positioning is stretched, and you do it when it hurts. Like I liked doing it because I knew it would, you know, I wanted but it was scary. It never feels good when you can, if a trade is easy to do, it's probably wrong. I mean, that's probably the way to sum this up, right? So anyway, the point is commodities, that they're very important. I think they'll probably go much higher in the years ahead, but it's not going to be a straight line. It's not going to be easy.
One of the things I'm going to wrap up here. One of the things I want to put a punctuation on that is also, this is a single conversation we're having in the moment right now. This was a decision Brent had made last week. Tomorrow, all bets are off. He can change his mind because the markets are going to change. Yeah. And one of the things I find so fascinating is when people are like, well, you said this, and it was like 4 months ago. And it was like, I don't know how you can take anything for what it was 4 hours ago, especially in the current market environment.
That's right. That's right. I'm always happy. Listen, I'm always happy to share with people what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, but you have to understand that I reserve the right to change my mind at a moment's notice.
All right. Well, at a moment's notice, there you have it. We appreciate everyone joining us. You can see some of the charts that we have with Macro Alchemist on Twitter, using macro_alchemist. You can see some of the things that Brent shared in this conversation, the charts that he shared, the thread he put about why he did the silver put and the other puts that he did on this week. So all that is on his Twitter, which you can find at Santiago AU Fund. You can find me there as well, using John Katsumita. You can find this show both on YouTube and on Twitter using the handle Milkshakes Pod. That'll do it. Brent, any last words before we say goodbye and have a good weekend to everyone?
No, it's a long 3-day weekend, Memorial Day. I hope everybody goes out and enjoys themselves. And for any family members that have people you know, in the service or that were in the service, you know, my hat's off to you, and blessings to your family, especially on Monday.
Yes, thanks to you all, and thanks to everyone who joined us. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next weekend. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.